Hello, everybody. This is Pete Sanchez, staff writer and social media coordinator for the Catholic Star Herald newspaper, and you are listening to Talking Catholic. I'm your ship's boat cap today, and with me, of course, is the skipper.
Okay, seriously. We have to stop talking before the podcast records, because I make one joke about calling you the ship's captain and you go right into it. So, yes, he is the ship's captain, and I am your lowly producer, Mike Walsh, Director of Communications for the Diocese of Camden. How are you doing today, Pete?
I'm doing well today, Mike.
Good.
How are you?
Good. I'm well, actually. I am well. This has been we're recording this during Lent. This will probably be going up shortly. And, you know, I would say that in the diocese so far, it's been a good Lenten season. As a matter of fact, you got to attend one of the cooler aspects of Lent this year. You went to the Diocesan Youth Congress this past weekend, right?
I did, Mike. It was, I've had the privilege of going for a number of years, and this year just seemed to be two dynamic speakers, Carrie Ann Ford from Buffalo, New York, and Greg Wozinski from Ohio. They were the keynote, and they were kind of the two really just to lead the youth. There were about 400 youth. I'm still trying to get the numbers for the story.
I saw some of your photos. It looked like a packed house.
Oh, yeah. It really was. It was at Christ the Redeemer Parish in ATCO. Mm-hmm. And it was just a beautiful day. Got there. I walk in there. They're playing We Are Family.
Oh, really?
And the kids are dancing. And it was beautiful. And then workshops were wonderful after the keynote. And then Bishop Sullivan really gave a great homily. Yesterday's gospel was on the woman at the well, and really his homily was about, you know, transforming. Let Jesus enter the, you know, he's a living water from the well of our hearts that can fill us and transform us.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting. They were live streaming, I think, two of the sessions and then the Mass. So I had a conflict, so I couldn't go. But I did pull up on my phone while I was traveling. And I got to say, they were pretty engaging. And the bishop's homily, I was able to jump into the Mass as he was giving his homily. And it's, you know, he's a very good homilist. And it was really, you really got the sense that he understood sort of, you know, lighting the fire of these young people. I really wish I could have been there. I love being around big groups of sort of similarly minded Catholics, you know, and I would say almost with respect to almost any other aspect of sort of a diocesan or a Catholic gathering, when you're around a lot of young people living their faith, it just restores my faith in mankind altogether.
And I will agree. And I think the thing for me that's nice to see is I was interviewing some kids, and it's neat to see it through fresh eyes. Because I was talking to youth who live in, for instance, Egg Harbor Township. They've never been to this before. So all they know is their small community of Catholic youth. They come here. They see so many other people like them, like you were saying, to see like-minded Catholics. But for these 14 and 15-year-olds, it's beautiful that they can see the universal church.
Yeah.
And it's just something, it's really such a privilege to talk to them. And this one girl was dancing. It was like 8 o'clock at night. And I felt, you know, I'm pretty tired. I was there since noon.
Well, you're not a young man anymore.
And no, unfortunately. But to see this 15-year-old girl dancing and laughing, and she was just so on fire to go back to, I think she was from Egg Harbor, and just had a light.
Yeah.
And it was really, and all of them, 400 lights left that building.
Yeah.
And it just reaffirmed why I love my faith, to be able to see something like that. And people like Greg Wozinski, Carrie Ford, and not to mention, you know, I can't forget Greg Coogan, who we had
our former guest,
Former and future guest. Yeah. It was wonderful to see that transformative.
And if I'm correct on this, you may still be, if our listeners are interested, they still may be able to see those two keynotes and the Mass. The church that does the stream, or the church where this was held, that regularly streams their Masses and special events. And I was looking through, and they were recorded for later viewing. So if you go to ctratco.org CTRAT.com. I'm going to assume that's an acronym for the church. CTRATCO.com. You should be able to pull up their recent videos and be able to check out what you might have missed at the Diocesan Youth Congress.
And CTR, yeah, it's CTR is Christ the Redeemer.
Okay.
And then ATCO is the name of the town. So that might be easier to remember.
That would be much easier to do. So CTR ATCO as opposed to how I did it, CTRATCO. My apologies to the lovely people at Christ the Redeemer. My apologies. Today we're actually continuing this discussion of children and youth within the diocese, and we have a very special guest with us today to talk about a very special topic, which is, you know, a strong focus of every diocese in the country, and quite frankly, every diocese around the world. Would you like to introduce our friend?
Sure, Mike. Rod Herrera. He's a director of the Camden Diocese's Office of Child and Youth Protection. He's been in that capacity since 2004 when the office was started. And he has a few accomplishments. And in 2014, he received the CAP, the Child Awareness Prevention Faith-Based Award of New Jersey at the for coordinating the Child Assault Prevention Workshops and in our diocese's churches and schools. Since he got to that before, and he's a licensed clinical social worker, and he has an interesting background as well with pediatric oncology, social worker, and we'll have to talk about it because you actually knew a family member. You know a family member of mine who in that capacity as well. So, Rod, thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Pete.
How are you?
And Mike, how are you guys?
Thank you. Good to see you.
Good.
Nice to see you as well. So first off, you are not from this area. You were born in Los Angeles?
Born and raised in L.A. My family is originally from Costa Rica, and they came pretty much after World War II. My brother and sister were already here. They settled in Los Angeles, and then I was a surprise birth because my brother and sister are 13 and 10 years older than I am. But yeah, I went to Loyola High School, Jesuit High School, and then Loyola Marymount University. So the Jesuits educated me for 8 years, and then I gave them 6 years of my life. But yeah, Los Angeles is, I love that city, and I'm still like a Dodgers fan and a Lakers fan, but I don't know that I would ever live there again. It's just so crowded. There's too many people, and the ground shakes, and that's not my favorite thing. So I like it here in South Jersey. Yeah.
And talk about, you gave your life to the Jesuits for 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly how?
Well, after I graduated from Loyola Marymount, I entered the Jesuits, so I was a novice with them for 2 years. And then they sent me to Bellarmine College Prep to teach at the high school that was up in San Jose. And then after that, I went to Fordham University and did 2 years of philosophy. And then from there, I went to Phoenix, Arizona, and I taught at the high school there. It's called Brophy College Prep. And at some point during that school year, I discerned the Lord was calling me to leave. So after 5.5 years, I left the Jesuits. But I'm still very much, I guess, a Jesuit at heart. My spirituality, my prayer life is, I think, still very Ignatian. In fact, my personal email address has AMDG in it.
Beautiful.
Because I really believe that everything that we do should be ad majorem Dei gloriam, for the greater glory of God.
Mm-hmm. And Mike and I have Ignatian. We both are grads of St. Jude's University.
I know that.
And for me, too, I went to St. Jude's Prep in Philadelphia. So I had about 9 years of schooling because I did a graduate year at St. Joe's University.
I thought it was because it took you 5 years to go through high school?
Probably, yeah. Well, you know, I actually started kindergarten later in life. So I always say that it's because I kept on trying to put the circle block in the rectangle.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. Good for you. Did it ever work?
I guess they passed me.
Okay.
Thank God. But how did you, having that inform your life, you know, those Ignatian ideals, how did you get to this place? How did you become a social worker?
When I left the Jesuits, I landed in Fresno, California, and taught eighth grade for about, well, 2.5 years. It really, you know, the Lord just works wonders in our lives all the time. I left in January, went to Fresno, and during the Christmas break, the school had to fire the eighth grade teacher. So there was an opening that came up suddenly. And then I show up, and the principal's called me and said, would you like to teach eighth grade? And having already taught high school for a couple of years, I was very comfortable with eighth graders. So I taught in one of our Catholic schools in Fresno. And of course, at that time, the salaries as they are now are not as high as for public school teachers. And I decided that I really wanted to go in a different direction. And so I, after teaching at eighth grade for 2.5 years, I went to California State University at Fresno for the graduate program in social work. So I was in school for 2 years, at that time working in a small rural hospice program. So my first social work job was working with the dying and their families, which then led me to work at the Children's Hospital in Fresno in pediatric oncology. So I was very, very comfortable with that. The fact that it's children who are afflicted with cancer is a whole different dimension. It obviously makes it a lot more emotional. It's more serious. Yeah. But I got to tell you, working with those kids with cancer and their families was a tremendous blessing for me. And my life is richer because of my interaction and my contact with those kids and those families.
And it can, I guess, through your work now with the child abuse prevention, that kind of you saw these children going through this ordeal of cancer, and it kind of is it's not a straight line, but you know, I could see you, or correct me if I'm wrong, you know, the idea of I want to, maybe I can help prevent this for children, you know, in other ways. And what else can afflict children?
Well, I think that brings us to a good question, though, is your office, what are you doing right now? Like, what does the office do?
So the Office of Child and Youth Protection was created in 2004 under the direction of Bishop Joseph Galante, our emeritus bishop. And the office was created as a direct result of, unfortunately, the clergy sex abuse scandal of the early 2000s, when it broke out of Boston in 2002. So the bishops, in response to that scandal, and then realizing that it was not isolated to Boston, that it was nationwide, wrote this amazing document called the Charter for the Protection of Children and Young People, which they wrote and ratified and implemented all in 2002. And anybody who knows the church and knows how the church acts and reacts to things knows that we're very slow. So the fact that all 196 dioceses and eparchies in the country decided to implement this charter that quickly shows the depth of the commitment that the bishops had to, first of all, healing the victims, secondly, ensuring that this would never, ever happen again. And there are several articles in the charter. Two of them specifically direct my office. Article 12 talks about training. And so every adult who has regular contact with children has to go to a training. And in this diocese, we use CAP, Child Assault Prevention. So adults go to this 90-minute presentation to learn about child abuse prevention, bullying, and now even social media and the internet. It also says that the children need to be trained. So all of the children in our schools and parishes receive a similar training. In the parishes, it's a program called Child Lures Prevention. And the premise of that program is that predators they use lures, like fishing lures. So the most common lure would be like the pet lure, where a predator will approach a child in a park and will say, "I lost my little puppy. Can you help me find my puppy?" You know, and what little child doesn't like puppies? So the predator will lure the child into the bushes and then do horrendous things to the child. So the Child Lures Prevention Program teaches the kids what the different lures are. And then there's Article 13, which talks about background checks. And every adult who has regular contact with children has to be fingerprinted and cleared by the Diocese of Camden in order for them to be volunteers or employees around children.
Mm-hmm. That includes priests, school, anybody who works in school, be it a janitor, be it a lunch lady.
That's right. And so you mentioned priests because the charter specifically says all clergy. So when we talk about that, that means priests and deacons. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter if they have contact with children or not. All priests, all clergy, everywhere in the country, whether they're in active ministry or retired, must go through a background check process and be cleared by the diocese.
And not just background checks and clearance, but also, so they have their background checks, they have their clearance, they have their CAP training, and then they have to go back for follow-up training as well, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And the charter doesn't guide us on that. So every diocese has different policies. Here in the Diocese of Camden, everybody is retrained once every 5 years, which I don't think is extraordinary. You know, that's 90 minutes every 5 years. That's an easy thing to do. Mm-hmm. And then the background check, everybody is fingerprinted the first time, and then they're rechecked through a different process, but there's still a criminal history background recheck. And that happens every 3 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that, just speak a bit about the training, because I was a youth minister at St. Mary's of Lima.
Yeah, I remember that.
And okay, well, I had to get CAP trained.
Yes,
and
you did.
It consisted of somebody, I forget the person's name, coming to talk, and also a video. Who goes to, you have trained, you give the sessions yourselves?
No, I do not. So for CAP, we have people who work at the state level. So CAP is not only just in New Jersey, but it's all over New Jersey. Every county has a CAP office, but it's also in other states and now international too. So CAP, Child Assault Prevention, is a program that teaches people to be aware of the signs of abuse or neglect, and then what to do when you suspect abuse or neglect. That's CAP 1. Well, we call it CAP 1. CAP 2, which is the retraining after you've done CAP 1, is on bullying awareness and bullying prevention. And that's where I think you may have seen the video. I don't think there's a video in CAP 1, but there's a video in CAP 2. And then CAP 3 is on social media and the internet. It's really cyber empowerment. It teaches adults things like Facebook and Twitter and all those other things that millennials use, that, you know, some of us who are older, we're aware of them, but we don't know what they are. But it teaches us what the dangers are for kids, especially, to be on the internet. And I just want to share with you that in 2014, all the clergy were due for their recheck, and Bishop Sullivan had seen a CAP 3 session at Camden Catholic High School. And he said to me, I want our priest to go through this. So, but I put in a 30-minute component. It was a pastoral component. So, you know, Father, how do you deal with somebody that you think might be addicted to the internet? Or even if you think you might be yourself addicted to the internet. And it was really, it was funny to present this to the priests who are all over the place, because you got guys who don't know what a Facebook is. You have priests who don't know what a Twitter is. They have no need to know what that is if they're, you know, they're 70, 80, 90 years old. And then you got priests who are like on it a little bit too much, on Facebook all the time, tweeting. So it was just an interesting presentation to do to our clergy. Mm. But they all attended, and they were all very attentive.
The seminarians get the same training?
Seminarians get a training at the seminary where they are.
Okay.
So, and that more than likely will be a program called Virtus, Protecting God's Children. And I believe the seminarians have that at least every year.
So is that something, if they come back here and are for a pastoral year, does that Virtus carry over?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Yeah, it does.
So if they go, okay, so if one of our priests does a year, I don't know, somewhere in, I know they were in Brazil, Brazilian missions, or in Rome. We have a few, we have a priest who just transferred to Rome last year.
Right.
There's, I guess, the CAP that will transfer over as well with the, those standards?
Yeah, if the Diocese of Rome requires that of their priests, or he might actually go through a training over there too, which is very possible, and I know he will
if asked to. And there was something that we actually worked on together last year, which was exciting. It was the translation of the protection of the charter
right.
for the protection of children and young people in the Vietnamese language.
That's right.
And you speak about that was at in West Collinswood.
That's right. So the charter and the charter is the document that the bishops wrote that directs what to do in response to this scandal. There's another document called the Essential Norms, which is the canon law backup to the charter. It's a very dry, very boring document because canon law tends to be like that. My apologies to Monsignor Pete Joyce, who's a canon lawyer, and Father Dave Klein. But the charter and the essential norms were available in English and Spanish, and then I floated an email out to all of my counterparts around the country saying, does anybody have this in Vietnamese? And nobody did. So I reached out to the folks at Most Precious Blood Parish in Collingswood and met a young woman there who runs the, what was it called, Pete? The Vietnamese...
The day program for children.
Yeah.
It was in I think on weekends.
They meet on Saturdays, a very vibrant program. Yeah. And I'm so sorry that I'm forgetting the name of that program. But she and
okay.
Did you write it down?
Yeah, her name was Tu Nguyen.
Yes.
Director of the Most Precious Blood Parish's Vietnamese American Cultural and Education Center.
That's hard.
I couldn't remember that.
Yeah, no.
Good job, Pete. Good job.
All right. Well, it was a year ago or more. So anyway, so they translated not only the charter and the essential norms, but they translated all of our other documents that we have, the criminal history background check policy, the chaperone policy, the social media policy. They did a fantastic job. And then I gave Bishop Sullivan, were you there with me? Did you take our picture or was that Jim?
That might have been Jim. Jim. I think across the street.
That's right. So we went to Bishop Sullivan and gave him the charter and the essential norms in Vietnamese, which he then gave to the USCCB, telling them that, look, here the Diocese of Camden has translated this national document into a language that it hadn't been translated into previously.
That's such a great piece of history.
That's great, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, that really, and so important.
Wonderful things happen in the Diocese of Camden.
Yeah, they really, and can you just, speak a bit about the in April.
Yes.
How is your office planning to participate in this month, this awareness month?
Well, April is National Children Abuse Prevention Month, and so we have this flyer that we got from the USCCB, which I'll be sending out to all of the parishes. In this flyer, there will be suggestions for posters, tidbits maybe for homilies, intercessions. So April is the month in which we, let me backtrack. Every month is abuse prevention for children. But April, we want to heighten people's awareness of the fact that kids are still being abused. Mm-hmm. Let me share with you just a few statistics. I know statistics are kind of boring, but the one of the most important statistics is that 90% of child abuse victims know their abuser. So when people talk about stranger danger, I don't know any other way to say this, but they're ignorant, because it's not true. There's no such thing as stranger danger. The people who abuse the kids know the kids, and the kids know the victims. The kids know the perpetrators. The other thing is, what's important is that one out of every four girls is abused before the age of 18, and one out of every seven boys is abused before the age of 18. Those are really sobering numbers. I mean, that goes to show that this is not a Catholic Church problem. This is a societal problem. The Catholic Church has taken this problem and has responded to it in the best way that it knows how, by training, by background checking, through prayer, through healing, and through a promise of never letting this happen again. but it still unfortunately happens in society. Now, the latest numbers are that that it's one out of every 10 children that is being abused before the age of 18. So we think that that's a direct result of increased awareness, like what we're doing in April, and just the fact that people are sensitive to this topic, that they're not sweeping it under a rug, that when a child says that he or she has been abused, that we believe them, because very, very, very few children make something like this up.
And speaking to those, there's actually somebody very important who works with you, the Victim Assistance Coordinator.
Yes.
So that is, what's your name?
Her name is Barbara Gondek.
Barbara Gondek.
And Barbara has been the Victims Assistance Coordinator since, I want to say 2004 or 2005, because I think that it was Monsignor Tom Morgan, who at the time was the Apostolic Administrator between Bishop DiMarzio and Bishop Morgan, Bishop Galante. So in between Bishop DiMarzio and Bishop Galante, Monsignor Morgan was the Apostolic Administrator for 6, 7, 8 months, I can't remember.
Okay.
But he suggested that we contract with Barbara Gondek. So Barbara's role as the Victims Assistance Coordinator, and every diocese has somebody like Barbara, is that when somebody has been abused, of abuse either by a deacon or a clergy or a religious, she reaches out to them to see what they need, what can help them heal, what can help them to move forward. And Barbara kind of coordinates all those efforts. A lot of these folks are in therapy themselves, they're in counseling. So Barbara coordinates with the psychotherapist to make sure that things are happening in therapy to help the victims to heal.
Mm-hmm. And one of the elements of your office, and you mentioned this for the month of April, but actually it's year round, is, you know, making sure that people have a number or some way of contacting someone if they are themselves abused or they know of someone who's being abused. Can you give us some of that information?
So we have a 1-800 number that people can call. And we make it available to everybody. It's on the website. It's in the Star Herald. The bulletins, all the parish bulletins are publishing them. They're supposed to be, and I think they are. So somebody can call that number, and that number actually goes to Barbara Gondek. Mm-hmm. Now, she doesn't staff it like 24/7, but she does check it frequently throughout the day. And the response is very quick. We know it works because when we are audited by the USCCB annually, they ask us about this 1-800 number, and we know that they've called it. These are the auditors.
Yeah.
So they've called the number to say, I need help. Can you please call me back? My name is, you know, John whatever, and here's my phone number. And Barbara will call them right away sometime during the day. So we know that the number works.
Yeah, good. Because that's one of the keys, is making sure that people know that, you know, regardless of anything else, call, let us know, let someone know if something like this is going on. That's one of the principal keys in sort of combating this. Now, you've mentioned before that there are dioceses around every diocese around the country has this kind of position and some version of this office. Are you in regular contact, like within our own province in the state of New Jersey? Do your colleagues and you chat often, and is there sort of a national opportunity to do this as well?
Yes, we do. In fact, in New Jersey is one of the few states in the country in which the five directors of the Office of Child and Youth Protection meet quarterly. Every 3 months we get together, usually in Trenton and Metuchen, because Camden is far from Newark and Patterson. And Newark, we've gone to Newark, but it's far from me in Camden. So we generally alternate between Trenton and Metuchen. We do get together, we talk about various things, whether it's a new program or a new vendor, or whether there's been a change in the fingerprint process, because the fingerprint process has so many nuances, from schools to volunteers in a parish to employees. So it just, there's a lot of different nuances that we try and stay on top of. And yes, Mike, every year there's a national conference. In fact, I just came back from Savannah, which is a wonderful, wonderful conference. That conference was co-hosted by the Diocese of Savannah and the Archdiocese of Atlanta. Next year, we're going to New Orleans. It'll be our second time there. That'll be the 13th conference. And then in 2019, I'm happy to say that Camden will be hosting the national conference. It'll be the 14th conference that we've had, and I'm really hoping we'll get a lot of people to come to Camden and visit our beautiful diocese.
Wow. That's very exciting news.
It is, yeah.
Well, you've heard it here first, breaking news. So mark your calendars. Do you know when? Do you know what months or?
It starts March the 24th is the Sunday, and the next day, Monday, is March the 25th, which is the Feast of the Annunciation. So we're going to probably look at some type of a Marian theme to the conference, because as I've been saying, who better to protect our children than our Lady? So that'll be exciting. I'm hoping that we have 196 dioceses. I'm hoping that we'll get at least half of them to come to the conference, which is what we generally run.
Yeah.
Because not every diocese has the finances for one thing and the staffing for another thing, but we're hoping for a good turnout.
Right, I'm just curious, what I've known you since I started in the diocese, and you started, I've been here 10 years, and you've been here longer than that. I just want to ask, what keeps you going? What wakes you up in the morning with this work?
I think to know that if we can save one child, that would be worth it. What happened with the clergy sex abuse scandal was truly horrific, and we've learned a lot of lessons from it. You know, back in those days, the bishops really didn't know how to handle it. The perpetrators were sent away, were treated by a psychologist who would then tell the bishops, okay, they're fine, and they weren't. And we've come to learn now that when somebody abuses, the recidivism rate is so high that they're going to abuse again. So we've learned to take those people completely out of ministry. So it's exciting for me to walk into my office every day, because I just don't know if I'm going to get that phone call from a principal who wants feedback on something that happened in the school, or somebody in the parish who needs a little clarification on the background check policy. And the questions that I get are, well, this person's already had a background check. Is it okay? And my answer is no. It has to be done through the diocese. They're going to be volunteering with our kids. They have to be verified by our process. And I have to repeat that a lot. But the other thing that keeps me going is that people are great. Working here for the diocese, there's so many wonderful people who work here, who are dedicated to working for the church. And people out there in the parishes and schools that are just wonderful, wonderful people to be privileged to work with.
Think about it. It's something, I guess it's a, I don't know if you want to call it a, you have to, there's so many people doing good work working with children.
Yes.
They're DREs, they're priests.
Yes.
Like I said, the janitors or the maintenance. It's beautiful to see, you know, like in the youth congress. But all the chaperones, I think they had 100 chaperones, they all have to be trained. How long from when they do the background, when they go to cap training, how long, I guess, does one get cleared? How long does it take? Say, like, if I wasn't cap trained and I did the fingerprinting and the classes, how long would that process take?
The fingerprint process for a volunteer is pretty fast. It's about 5 days.
Oh, so like a week.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Somebody goes on a Monday, the clearance letter will be in my office by Friday. What takes a little bit longer are the employees in the schools, because that process is done through the Department of Education.
Okay.
And as you can imagine, they're dealing with thousands of people, like especially in September, August, September. So their process takes quite a bit longer. It's probably more like 10 working days. But even that's not so. So the other one thing I wanted to also say too is that we have come to learn that regarding the internet, that 1 out of 5 children are solicited sexually on the internet. The next statistic though that always confounds me as a social worker is the vast majority of the kids don't report. So how do we know that it's 1 in 5 children if a lot of them aren't reporting? But the interesting thing there is the reasons why a child doesn't tell their parents is because a parent's typical reaction is to say, okay, I'm taking the computer away from you, mm-hmm. or I'm taking your cell phone away from you. It's not the child's fault. Obviously, there's a lot of bad people out there, and it's really not fair to punish the child because he or she has been sexually solicited. Yeah. But yeah, 1 out of 5 kids, which is a scary thing.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up. My son has finally sort of migrated into the world of online gaming, and he's 8 years old. And he plays on a couple of, there's a game called Roblox where you can play with, you know, his friends from school and whatnot. But it's the first time he's sort of been exposed online. And one of the conversations I had with him at the very beginning was, listen, if you have a strange conversation with anyone asks you questions on a subject, you know, that you're not familiar with or comfortable about, starts asking you about your body or where you are or what you look like, tell me right away. And I agree. And I think, and because I know his biggest fear in the world is that I'm going to take away the iPad or the computer, and he'll do anything to keep that from happening.
Oh, yeah.
So I absolutely do not want him to shut down. I want him to let me know. Because I admit that, you know, before having kids, you know, I was sure, yeah, we need to protect these children. That's insane. Why wouldn't we protect these children? Now I have a child, and I'm like, oh, I may have to do harm to people who are going to come to my house, because I now it's no longer a question. It's something I don't give, you know, a tip of the hat to. It's something I'm particularly focused on. So in a lot of ways, I have found your office to really be a fantastic educational opportunity for people who otherwise wouldn't know about any of this stuff. I mean, the education element certainly out there in the public schools has gotten good. You know, we do see, you know, the MTV's done a great job, you know, in the beginning for the last 20 years about, you know, protecting yourself. And I really do think that that's something that the millennials and whatever we're calling this next generation of young people are certainly informed about. But I think at the same time, we're seeing, you know, predators who get better at it, and there are other ways to get in. So it does require constant vigilance, which I think is where your office really serves a great, great purpose of constantly reminding us that, you know, you do have to be aware and present
always,
in your kids' lives.
Always have to be aware. One good resource that I'm going to give to everybody listening is from the National Center of Missing and Exploited Children. It's a program called Net Smarts. So it's NetSmartz, Net Smarts with a Z, .org, I think, or it might be .com. But it is a wonderful website that has a lot of information for parents and children and law enforcement and other adults. And for children, they have broken it down to kindergarten through third grade. Then they have programs for the middle schoolers, and then they have something for tweens, and they have something for the adolescents, for the high school kids. The high school kids, especially, there are vignettes. There are short vignettes done really, really well, and they address things like meeting somebody online, real-life stories of kids who met somebody online and then left home and were abducted by these people. So, and everything on that website is free, and it's really, really interesting. So NetSmarts with a Z, I recommend it. It's a good resource.
And that's what Mike was. You're always having your office, and I'm sure offices around the country are the same. Like, there are always constant vigilance, because about 10 years ago or so, when you started, this didn't have, the internet wasn't as big as it has now. The smartphones weren't as big. So there must be some anticipation there as well. You have to, with these conferences and you, how do you kind of prepare these, you know, for whatever else comes down the line?
How do I prepare?
You have to anticipate something, you know, it just seems like, you know, predators are always seem to be getting smarter.
Yeah.
I mean, that must be kind of your, it keeps you on your toes, kind of.
It does. And so I get asked, like, a question like, well, this person's with children, but the parents are present. It's amazing how often I get asked that. And I consistently say to people, and that this, one of my biggest challenges is to be consistent, to tell different people all around the diocese the same thing so that my message is always the same, right? It doesn't matter if the parents are present. And the reason why it doesn't matter is that a predator can groom a child right under our noses. And Mike, you're a parent, and I'm a parent, and no matter how careful we can be, somebody can always say something to the child. And it could be simple things like, your hair looks really pretty today, or that's a nice dress that you're wearing today. You know, a little compliment like that, that an 8-year-old will say, oh, this person likes me. And that'll be it for that day. That's the only comment. But then the next week, it's, you know, how are you doing today? And, oh, you know, you look really nice today, too. So it's constantly keeping our principals and our DREs and all the adults out there, keeping them alert, awake, and watchful.
Yeah. Particularly it's in this interconnected world we live in now, which, I mean, in every respect, I really do think it's a wonderful thing. I love the fact that we were preparing for the podcast and realized one of us didn't remember the name of something properly, and we pulled out our phones, and within 10 seconds, I was able to find the answer for
it. Well, I was trying to turn my phone on.
Well, yes. He's a lovely older man, but he's a wonderful person.
I don't know about lovely, but I'm old.
Lovely older man, Ron. It's true, though. I mean, but that interconnectivity, I mean, I'm on a zillion different messaging boards because there are things I need to be kept aware of, and I want to be kept aware of. And I would hate to live in a society where we would have to cut those things down, but I'm also aware that we live in a society where those things really need to be monitored, particularly where there are predators, and particularly where we're talking about are the young people in our lives. I mean, whereas I kind of live in this world now where I just see predators everywhere because I'm a dad, and that's kind of how my brain is gone. And I hate the fact that that exists. But to be quite frank about it, 400 years ago, we lived in a world where we had to be prepared for predators all the time, too. They just happened to be bears, you know. I mean, there were other predators as well, but we've kind of, you know, this modern world, we have this weird feeling that we're constantly in a state of safety, but we're really not. I mean, an asteroid can hit at any time. Not that we can necessarily do anything, but let's be vigilant for that, too. You know, a car coming down the highway, you know, there's no difference. Well, this is probably an extreme comparison right now, but there's no difference in teaching your kids to look left and right before they cross the street and teaching your kids how to be responsible online as well. And then us as parents remembering to look out the window as our kids are crossing the street so we are aware and teaching them properly. So being online is no different than any other aspect of your life. You need to be vigilant and protective. And I'm not saying we need to live in a world where we, you know, put our kids in little safe houses so they can never be touched, but let's be aware of what's going on, aware of their lives, and make sure that they understand that there are rights, things that are right, and there are things that are wrong, and be aware of the things that are wrong. And so I always applaud people who make that part of their life of educating others. So thank you, Rod.
Well, you're welcome.
And we did mention a movie came out recently. It actually won Best Picture.
It did.
Spotlight. Speak a bit about that. That got a lot of national conversation even before it won the Academy Award. And then it kind of, I think unexpectedly, to me at least, won. I thought it was a hard movie to watch. But to me personally, I think Mike and I have talked about it. It's an important movie. Can you just talk your thoughts about how that kind of things came back into the conversation in some, you know, that movie, what it was about with the... what was going on in Boston.
So I thought that the movie definitely deserved the picture of the Oscar movie of the year. It's really more a movie along the lines of like All the President's Men and a couple of other journalistic movies. Absence of Malice is one that Paul Newman, I think, and Sally Field. So this movie is a movie about how the reporters put the story together in Boston. And it's got wonderful talent. Michael Keaton is in it. The guy who plays Hulk Hogan.
Mark Ruffalo.
Thank you. Either Amy Adams or Rachel McAdams. I always confuse those
Rachel
two.
Rachel McAdams.
Was it? Yeah, sure, was it Amy Adams?
Okay. I'm positive it wasn't Amy Adams. Rachel McAdams.
So it's got some you know, big name people in it. These journalists in Boston, they were all Catholic except for the editor. The editor was Jewish and new to the Boston Globe. But the way that the scandal broke and the way that the reporters reported what was going on, for me, the most, and if you haven't seen it, you really need to go see it. I've seen it three times. The most powerful scene for me, and this is kind of a little bit of a spoiler alert, but the journalists were sitting in a room on the telephone with a psychologist who was very much aware of child abuse and the scandal that was breaking. And they, at that point in time, the reporters had like 9 names of priests, and they were blown away the fact that they had 9 priests who were known perpetrators, known sex abusers. And so somebody threw the question out at this psychologist and said, what do you think are the numbers? Like, what percentages are we dealing with here? And he said, it's about 3-4%. And they were stunned, because then they went, wait a minute, how many priests are there here in Boston? And somebody threw out a number. And they went, wait, 4-5%, that's about 100 priests, 111. So they went from 9, they were blown away by that, to 111 priests. And they were just like all stunned when they realized how serious and how vast the scandal was. It doesn't make the Catholic Church look good, but it shouldn't. It's the truth. It's what happened. What I'm upset about, though, is that they didn't then go on to talk about all the things that we are doing now. Instead, at the very end, they list all the dioceses in the country in which there was abuse, which they could have just said all 196 dioceses in one little line. They could have said that, but no, they chose to put all the dioceses by name. So that was disheartening. But, you know, I was telling my colleagues, it's kind of like the movie Passion of the Christ, because the Passion of the Christ is about the Passion. It doesn't go into the resurrection, because it's not about the resurrection.
Right.
That movie was focused specifically on just the Passion of our Lord. Spotlight was focused on the breaking of the news of the scandal.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, it's very much a cautionary tale. Is how I remind. I saw it the day it opened. You know, something I needed to be prepared for.
Yeah.
And I had certainly been following it as it was moving along. And you know, after a while, you realize it was going to be an Oscar contender, and so this was going to be a story that followed through. And what I took out of it, and you know, we sort of had to be prepared for it, just as Catholics. This is something that happened. This is the dark period of Catholicism in the United States, and it's something we've absolutely learned from.
Right.
And the goal of the charter is to never allow something like this to happen again. And when you look at the formal policies and regulations that have been put into place since then, you realize, I mean, it's an enormous sea change to sort of this the blinders that were on for so many decades prior. Whereas I agree with you that it would have been nice had there been some sort of a postscript about that. The important thing to remember out of Spotlight, in addition to never forget, is that this is not an issue that's isolated only within the Catholic Church. I mean, all you have to do is open up your newspaper or read it online. This is an issue that is in every school, every public school system. I mean, this is something that happens and that everybody needs to be aware of, not just Catholics within the Catholic Church.
Okay.
This can happen in Cub Scouts. Anywhere where young people are present, there's a possibility of something like this happening. I mean, we've seen U.S. gymnastics come under the gun because of a doctor who was has been alleged to have mistreated some of the gymnasts. But we see it across the country, which is why Penn State, and perhaps the most famous of them all. This is something that really needs to stay in the public conversation, so people don't get tone deaf to
it. Right.
You know, not that I can't imagine a parent today getting tone deaf to it, except that we live in a world where we're all very, very busy, and you know, sometimes allowing our child to hang out on social media or on their smartphones or iPads means that, you know, we don't have to watch them for an hour, but we do. I mean, we have to be a reminder. You know, those things aren't babysitters. They are ways of entering our homes, and we need to sort of treat them as such. We need to respect them as devices, and not just, you know, we've sort of talked about the electronic aspect of this, but the people in our lives too. You know, I mean, it's hard to say, and I don't want to walk through a world where I have to wonder who's the perpetrator in my son's life right now. But I also know that the reality of the situation is I should probably have that in my mind somewhere, you know, just making sure that I'm listening to my son when he tells me a story as to what's going on in his life, that I know the difference.
Exactly, Mike. And that's the thing. We have to listen to our kids. We have to spend time with them and really listen to them. So the more time that we take the time to listen to what they're saying and tell them, you know, if there's ever anything you want to tell me, don't be afraid to tell me anything. that's probably one of the biggest changes that's happened since this, is that their parents, you know, talk to your kids about you're on the computer. What are you doing on the computer? Not like you're investigating them, but just because you're curious, you want to know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Some of the things they're going to tell you, you're not going to understand because they're on sites or games or something like that, and just listen to them. Yeah. Listen to our kids.
And I think with that too, with the family, it's. I remember when I grew up, I didn't really have the internet too much. I was outside always playing with my friends, and I think now can be, correct me if I'm wrong, kids are isolating themselves, so it's becoming just the parents and the child. But the community too can be, the parish communities can be such an influence. And is that, the youth can, different parish festivals, so people can know each other, they right. can form that bond of trust, the priest, the deacon, the seminarian, the lifelong faith formation coordinator, the youth minister. I mean, I think the internet has created so much connectivity, but isolation, I think we need that community for protection as well. I think we need to be able to develop those bonds of trust with, and the community, the parishes, it can start with the parishes and with the youth groups and whatever they do. So they know each other, the parents know each other, and they know that the different youth, like they know their son's best friend.
Right.
And if something, hey, Johnny, there is something that, so, and that's.
Yeah. Definitely something we need to stay aware of. Now, I will tell you that you're officially going to become our longest podcast recipient.
Oh my gosh.
In a few okay. moments.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm boring you.
No. This is one of those conversations. I kind of offhandedly said earlier, this is a very special podcast in the sense that we're going to be talking on a sensitive subject that I really, as a parent, I really do think everybody should be aware of. But we do need to wrap it up. However, yeah. we do end with three questions.
Oh, okay.
So we would like to ask you three questions.
Okay.
Peter?
Tres preguntas.
Sí.
Sí, sí, yeah. From a Cuban to a Costa Rican.
Sí. Tengo que contestar en español o en inglés?
Yo no sé. Oh, no. Un poquito español?
Sí, okay. Sí.
Tu favorito? No. You might have already covered this. I think you did. You talked about your Ignatian background and AMDG. Would you say, my question was, what's your favorite Ignatian tenet? There's AMDG, there's a Magis, yeah. Cur Personalis.
Yeah.
What is AMDG your favorite ad meorum de gloria?
Oh my gosh, there's so many. St. Ignatius was my favorite saint and had so many wonderful things to say. Ad meorum de gloria is one of them, but I think recently on my signature, an email, is that what you call it? Mm-hmm. When you put your name and then a little quote,
yeah.
It's a signature? Okay, it was up until recently. Find God in all things.
I love that too.
Which Ignatius says, find God in all things. But now it's something from Pedro Arrupe, and it's, what have I done for Christ? What am I doing for Christ? What will I do for Christ? And I try and let that guide me each day.
Well, he has another fantastic quote that I love. It's too long to say the whole thing, but it's fall in love, stay in love,
yes.
and it will decide everything.
That's
and I
right.
love that. What
it is,
what you fall in love with to decide how you make your day, what you wake up for, what excites you, what kind of people you hang out with. I love it.
Absolutely.
And that's something, and that's beautiful. I didn't know about that other one from a group, but
yeah.
gotta thank you.
Okay. You're welcome.
Sharing that wisdom. And so, Rod, what was the last book? Another question. Last book you read?
The last book that I read was a book on discernment, on Ignatian discernment, and I think that's all it's simply called is discernment. I just finished that about maybe 2 months ago.
And this is, since you're a Dodgers fan.
I am.
And who's your favorite Dodgers player?
Sandy Koufax.
Sandy Koufax. Yeah.
Probably the best left-handed pitcher in the history of the game.
He retired too early.
He did. Well, he was hurt. He had arthritis in his elbow. Yeah. But not only was he a phenomenal pitcher, but he was a classy gentleman. He is, because he's still alive. Mm-hmm. Just a classy, classy gentleman.
Yeah.
Jewish, and so he wouldn't pitch on Saturday. He wouldn't pitch on the Sabbath.
I know. It's one of my favorite stories about him.
Yeah.
That's a wonderful testament to faith.
Yeah. And a batting average of like 1.79 or something like that. He was a horrible hitter. Horrible.
As he should be as a pitcher. Right. So Rod, as we're wrapping up, if someone needs to contact the hotline?
The 1-800 number is 1-800-964-6588.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And I think this will conclude our podcast. Pete, it was good chatting with you.
You too, Mike. Rod, thank you very much. Many prayers with your ministry.
Thank you very much.
We hope to have you back on soon for more A Nation Wisdom. Keep up the great work.
Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you, Rod.
And everybody, thank you for listening. Until next time, God bless.
God bless.